This is The Guardian.
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes Monday and Thursdays.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Science Weekly is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honor of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organization, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
As we went up the mountain, the ecosystem changed from tropical forest to cloud forest, which is one of the most amazing experiences. Just watching this pristine water, listening to literally hundreds of species of birds and their songs.
That's Cesar Rodriguez Garavito, a legal professor from NYU and a founding director of the More Than Human Rights Program.
I'm originally from Colombia, so I'm very familiar with that type of ecosystem. That was the first time that I ever saw a pristine forest of that type. So I got to see for the first time what my own country and my own place of origin would have looked like.
He's describing Los Cedros, a forest in Ecuador, which might not have been so pristine had it not been given legal rights during a landmark case in 2021. The courts sided with the forest to protect it from being mined, allowing it to continue thriving. Despite successes like Los Cedros, the concept of granting rights to nature is controversial and contested, including by our own government here in the UK. So, could this growing movement be part of the solution to the biodiversity and climate crises we're facing? And what would it take for it to go mainstream? From The Guardian, I'm Madeline Finlay, and this is Science Weekly. Jonathan Watts is The Guardian's global environment editor. He's been covering the nature rights movement, as well as the UK government's position on it. I spoke to him as he sweltered in the morning heat of the Amazon rainforest, where he now lives.
Well, the idea of giving rights to nature is that ecosystems or individual animals or nature as a broad principle in the form of Mother Earth should have legal rights, and that it can, in the human world of judges and courts, be represented and defend itself against extractivist capitalists or big corporations or miners or anyone, just to make the fight a bit fairer, I suppose. So this has been a topic that has been around for almost 50 years, and it has steadily gained support, and you have certain countries that support this idea. Indigenous communities have always supported something along these lines. But now, even as the sort of momentum is building, the British government has come out at a United Nations meeting and said in front of the entire world, neither nature nor Mother Earth can ever have rights. That this is a fundamental position of the British government and that it won't change, and that rights can only be held by legal entities with legal personhood. So a very strong statement that no way, we're not going down that path.
And do we know why the UK took this stance?
Quite why the British government did this is not very clear. What we do know is that when The Guardian asked them, it turns out that this was said by the Environment Ministry. It wasn't some British diplomat speaking outside of his area of expertise. It was a DEFRA official. But it has provoked a strong debate, and it has also exposed just how the British economy and others like it work, and that the fact that they depend on nature not having any rights and Mother Earth not having any rights. Otherwise, this particularly rapacious form of capitalism cannot function as it is currently doing. But to come out and say this, it seems extraordinary.
So the UK government have taken a strong position in that respect, but in plenty of other places around the world, this is a much more accepted idea. So what's the argument for giving nature rights?
The idea is that nature needs more protection. And everybody talks about nature protection. Everybody thinks nature's important, but it's kind of left to NGOs or indigenous people. But it doesn't have that solidity that legal rights would give it. And the whole argument, I think, is to try to make it a fairer fight between those who want to exploit nature and nature itself wanting to be protected and preserved. And of course, it raises lots of complicated issues about how do you know what nature wants. But lawyers say that it's not so strange to give rights to a non-human entity because the law can already give rights to nations, which don't have, you know, they don't exist as individual humans, to corporations, to trade unions, even ships can have rights. So if that's the case, why not give rights to specific animals, river basins, forests, or nature as a whole?
So who's driving this at the moment, and why do you think it's really gaining momentum now?
Some of the most advanced countries in this regard are places like Ecuador, where the Constitutional Court has recognized the rights of a forest, and the Constitution also recognizes the rights of nature. New Zealand's gone pretty far on this. Ireland is due to vote on this, I think, in a referendum, or at least a referendum has been proposed on this. It's gaining momentum now because there is a series of new groups that have appeared in recent years that bring together lawyers, judges, Silicon Valley entrepreneurs, indigenous leaders, artists, and academics. It's not just the usual conservation groups and environmentalists. It's much more eclectic than that. There is the More Than Human Rights Project, which was founded by a guy, a legal expert called Cesar Rodriguez Garavito. They're kind of getting together with these very innovative workshops, and they are putting forward a test case.
Ecuador is, to my mind, the global headquarters of the rights of nature movement and legal field.
We met Cesar at the start of this episode, climbing the mountain in Ecuador, in the Los Cedros forest.
So this is one of the most biodiverse regions of the world. The Los Cedros forest sits at the intersection of the Andes and the Chocó region. And it has hundreds of endemic species that were threatened by a mining project that the government was set to authorize in Ecuador. A collective of citizens and environmentalists sued the government on behalf of the forest, basically asserting that that ecosystem was a whole that needed to be protected because the interdependence among the different species, between the birds, the moths, the fungi, the plants, the forest, that all provided not only services to humans in the form of water, for instance, clean water, but also had moral and legal value in itself. So what the Constitutional Court of Ecuador did in 2021, in a landmark ruling, was to say that the forest does have a right to survive and to thrive, and therefore mandated that mining be banned in that particular territory.
Cesar and the rest of the Moth team have been working to make sure that the protection granted to the forest is upheld, and they've been finding some creative ways to do it.
The first activity in their project was a slow visit to Los Cedros in late 2022. Rob McFarlane, the well-known British writer, Cosmo Sheldrick, also the well-known British musician, and Juliana Furci, a leading mycologist from Chile, and I visited the forest in order to do a number of activities that have become the basis for our collective effort at helping protect the forest. So Cosmo was there to collect sounds of the forest. He produces and he composes the most beautiful music with the sounds of nature. So we started at the base camp and slowly made our way to the top of the mountain. And it was there at the high camp where one night Cosmo would start playing music and imagining how he would deploy some of the sounds of nature that he had collected during the visit. It was the most inspiring jamming session that I've been part of because the forest was literally part of the jamming session.
Trees speak in your leaves, bees and streams, tell me your dreams.
What we're doing now, after coming back from the forest, we're working on a legal case, a legal initiative that we call Copy Green, that aims to acknowledge just that, that the forest was a co-author of the song. This is unprecedented. There's no system of intellectual property that recognizes the contribution of non-humans to the composition of, in the making of music or other forms of art or other forms of creativity. This is not easy because, again, it's unprecedented. But since we're not aiming for any form of economic benefit, the song will be released into the commons. The goal is not to give back profits to the forest, but rather to acknowledge her co-authorship. So we're going to file for the protection of the creative co-authorship of the forest alongside the humans, meaning us, who are there.
Trees speak in your leaves, bees and streams, tell me your dreams.
This feels like a moment where there is a lot of opportunity in the sort of global political environment. Although on one side, yes, you do have populists and very powerful petrostates, but this is also going to be a year when Colombia, which has a very pro-environment, pro-nature government at the moment, they will host the Convention on Biodiversity meeting this year. Next year, Brazil, which also has some really strong environmentalists in the government, will host the first ever climate COP, COP 30, to be held in the Amazon. So it's going to be in the center of life on Earth. And a lot of environmental groups and indigenous groups are hoping that they can get nature much higher on the agenda of those climate talks. So there's a lot of things happening at the moment. And there are a lot of people who seem more willing to listen to this kind of thing than they were in the past. Because for a long time, these kind of ideas were considered slightly ridiculous, like, oh, you're going to give a vote to dogs and things like that. But it's much more sophisticated than that, and people are much more open than they were before because they can see just how much the destruction of the natural world is affecting human life.
So if we entered an alternate reality where the UK had recognised nature as a legal entity or had at least made noises that it might do so in the future, what do you think that could have done for British wildlife and ecosystems?
It's not just a case of how would this would help one ecosystem or one river in Britain, though it probably would help them too, because if you've had strong legal rights for river systems, for example, the water companies that are dumping sewage there could face really strong court action brought by people on behalf of nature, on behalf of that river. Or if you felled a tree, an old tree that had been there for years and was much loved, again, somebody could represent that tree and challenge the person who cut it down. So it goes to the heart of our sort of exploitative nature, our extractive relationship with the world, and tries to make more of a balance. So it's all about listening to nature. You can't represent anything unless you listen to it. And that's the core of it.
Science is definitely a decisive voice in this dialogue, because scientists have moved from documenting competition to documenting cooperation. But there's more than that. To the regular citizen, to the layperson, this idea resonates strongly, because in the end, it's a story of reconnection that addresses the realization that we're putting in danger our own survival as a species.
Birds, sing me your rhymes, trees and stones, teach me your times. Birds, sing me your rhymes, trees and stones.
A huge thanks to Jonathan Watts and to Cesar Rodriguez Garavito. The music, called Song of the Cedars, and feel recordings that you heard in this episode were by Cosmo Sheldrake and the Los Cedros Forest. If you'd like to find out more, we've put links to John's articles about nature rights on the podcast webpage at theguardian.com. And before you go, I want to recommend The Guardian's brilliant podcast series, Black Box. It's all about how artificial intelligence is colliding with human lives. The most recent episode tells the story of Robert Williams, a man arrested for a crime he didn't commit. The officers were acting on a tip, but it wasn't from a witness or informant. In fact, it wasn't from a person at all. Subscribe by searching for Black Box wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes are out every Monday and Thursday. And that's it for today. This episode was produced by Holly Fisher. It was sound designed by Joel Cox. And the executive producer is Ellie Bury. We'll be back on Thursday. See you then.
This is The Guardian.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.